Oh, that must be the Gilliam. That's the Gilliam building for the internal office.
The internal office.
Meeting 135. Who's present? Councilman Smiley. Cartier, Kovac, Penrose Holland, Lee Stiller, Joe Redder, Tim Sheldon, Dave Thackett, Dan Patrick, and Bob Lund. And myself, and Ruby Gilmore, my aide. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes of previous meeting?
Second.
Then move to second, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Moving right along, I guess whoever's doing all the floodplain. The White Clay floodplain study.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name's Tony Schiavi, and I'm with the Special Services Department. We have two presentations for you today. First one has to do with a home buyout in connection with the 2005 flood ordinance. And the second one is a review of a study of the White Clay Creek that was done, two studies of the White Clay Creek that were done probably 4 or 5 years ago. So we'll start with the first one. The first one has to do with the buyout of a home with the address of 3418A Falkland Road. It's the last home buyout pursuant to the stormwater mitigation project, and that's the project, the $17 million project that was initiated by Ordinance 04176 that was passed in January of 2005. The ordinance directed the Department of Special Services to develop and implement a flood mitigation solution for the Hyde Park area. That was one of about 30 other areas that we had to have flood solutions for. The department has been working on the home buyout with FEMA, DENREC, and the Conservation District since 2007 as part of the stormwater mitigation project. So you have all those agencies involved. This gives you a location of where it's at. That's the property there, and you can see this is Falkland Road, Newport Gap Pike, Duncan Road here. Just want to point out a few things, some things that you don't see. There's a tributary that runs right along here, and it joins up with Hyde Run, which is this right here, this blue line here. And there's a culvert right next to that house. In addition to that, in the southern part of that property, there's a pinch point where the stream gets very narrow. And then you have these bends in the stream. And whenever you have bends in a stream, it's good environmentally because it promotes a biological or biohabitat. It's bad hydraulically in that it doesn't pass a lot of water. There's a lot of impedance to the flow.
Which way is it flowing this way?
It's flowing down. So, and that's really north-south that you see there. Now, we did do a few things. We constructed the regional stormwater management facility in Emily Bilsoe Hospital, and this addressed flooding concerns for all the homes in the vicinity of the Falkland Road Bridge, with the exception of that property. We also did the basin up in Del Castle, which helped that tributary that I pointed out that flows across. We did those two things, and it was enough to really help out a lot of the properties, but this property was not helped by it. The original plan of installing a relief storm sewer alongside the bridge will result in consuming 40 to 50% of the property at Falkland Road, at 3418 Falkland Road. Cost approximately $400,000 to $500,000 and require permission from many public agencies. So our original plan was to give upland storage and retain the flow with the Emily Bissell Basin and the Del Castle Basin, but also widen the opening underneath the bridge or put a relief line alongside the opening to get the flow through there faster. Those two things, or those three things, was our planned flood solution for the Hyde Park areas. But in looking at the numbers, the most cost-effective and practical solution involved the purchase of the property and demolition of the dwelling along with its accessory structures by the Conservation District with the financial assistance of a FEMA grant. And the last bullet point goes over the numbers. The cost of the property buyout and demolition is estimated to be $230,000 to $250,000. FEMA's $172,500 contribution reduces the county's cost of the project to only $57,000 to $77,000 at the most. So as you can see, instead of making a $400,000 to $500,000 investment, by buying out this property, we achieve a flood solution for the Hyde Park area at roughly 1/10 of the original cost.
Could you go back to your map?
Sure.
Because it's partly what you had explained to me before. Now, they're still not going to put another pipe under the road?
We're not going to do it, but because we don't really need it now.
But I mean,
but
the flow is going to be all right on the other side, on the north side?
Yes. Because the other property is not in jeopardy. But here's the thing about buying out the property. We're getting a little ahead of you, but that's okay.
Well, you had explained that to me, and I was thinking the property was on the other side that would have been backed up on. This is on the south side.
It's on the south side.
Which doesn't, that's why I had to ask you which direction the stream is going.
Yeah. And also, I mean, if you, when you have a culvert situation and it's too small, the water backs up on the opposite side, but you have enough downstream to flood out that culvert. In that you have the curves in the stream and you have that pinch point.
Well, the pinch point's still gonna regulate on the north side.
The pinch point's right here.
Okay, so that's where you're gonna flood it all.
And the curves here, they create a backwater condition on the culvert.
But they're not having a problem on the north side?
They're not having a problem on the north side. Because Emily Bissell helped that. They helped take the flows down. But you know, you don't know what's gonna happen in the future. When the individual that bought that house in the late 50s, there was nothing out there. There was no flooding problems or anything. But over time, urbanization caused these problems. Now, with control of this property, if it gets worse, we have the control of the property. We can put in a larger culvert. We don't have to buy it out from the owner. We'll own the property when this is all said and done.
You mean put another pipe?
Put another pipe in.
I mean, DelDOT has the right of way 20 foot off the road, anyways.
Right. So. Right. And DelDOT may be the agency that does it. But if they want to get, they don't have to go through the property acquisition process because we would just donate the property.
Tim, that intersection to the right, is that the corner of my new district?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Conservation District will acquire the property and perform the demolition work within the FEMA grant time frame. The district entered in, the district's role is to be the subgrantee to the federal grant. So they have to comply with the grant. And they have to incur all the costs, the local costs with the grant. But once it's completed, the county will purchase the property from the district for the amount equal to what they had to pay to get everything accomplished. Purchasing the property, demolishing the property, restoring the property. And we estimate that's going to be $57,500 to $77,000. The property then will become permanent open space with deed restrictions that will prohibit future development. And I'm sure if we wanted to put a larger pipe in there at a later date, we'd have no problem. Yeah, we'd have no problem with that.
Okay. Councilman Smiley.
Let me ask you, because I apologize, I'm not familiar with this parcel.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, can it go back to natural vegetative state? Or are we going to have to maintain it?
That's a good question. We have the ability to maintain it. It can be vegetated to become like a passive open space. That's possible.
It's cheaper.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
That makes it an extreme possible. As long as we're not going to get cited by our own code.
Right.
That's. I mean, that's a question we need. I need answered. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I mean, we've been down this road before. I mean, we actually turned down some property that someone wanted to give us because it was plus it's too much to maintain, it was enough, so, I mean, we're on by this, I understand what you're trying to do, but I need to know the continuing cost to Newcastle County, if there's a maintenance with it, also, just out of curiosity, did that home flood?
Repeated.
Okay, I didn't hear it, it looked like it would have, but just wanted to clear up, okay.
And it's right on the screen now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it can be landscaped to become passive urban space.
Okay, that misses my point, landscape means you're gonna spend money to plant stuff, you know what I'm saying? If we remove the tree, maybe seed it. Let Mother Nature have it.
Right.
I might be so right there. Was he even cruise upstream? No, was he even cruise up the Ferris?
Right across the street, park, okay, would be easier maintenance. Also, it's probably less than a quarter of a mile, or basically around the corner from Ray Spring Park.
Right.
So it's within maintenance distance.
Don't have any parks.
Still takes time, still takes equipment.
I see.
And Jim lives close there.
Yes, he does.
So he can get his weekend workout cutting the grass.
Let him off when he has a trespass.
Oh, we all know.
Okay. Just for housekeeping purposes, the property does meet all the flood criteria, buyout criteria in the original flood ordinance. It sustained repeated flooding going back to the late 50s. It's been deemed unsafe by a code enforcement official. It has been occupied since 2004. It has a public benefit for stormwater management mitigation. The impervious surfaces are going to be eliminated. We're going to have control of the property and we'll have the ability to do some storm sewer improvements to help future flooding issues if that should happen. It's a credible threat to public health. You can't live in the house. You can't stand near it. There's been structural damage to it. And repairing the dwelling is not economically viable. It would cost more to purchase or to renovate the property than it's worth.
What would be the future stormwater? I mean, what do you look at doing that?
Well, you can put in a large opening there and widen the channel.
Make it a pond, more or less.
Yeah,
A dry pond.
Open it up a little bit. I think that's what we're doing.
How much of a drop is it off of that? The elevation?
I couldn't tell you that.
I guess partly, you know, I talked to you a week ago, and honestly, what I thought you explained was on the other side of the road. I would have driven by and looked at it, know what this is, because it doesn't, you know, when you start saying you cannot put another pipe under a road, I'm sure you're flooding a piece of property that's north of the road, not the property south. When you explained that to me the other day.
Right.
Right.
And that solution was our original plan solution. And even that, there's more to that than just putting the pipe in. We said in an earlier slide that you would consume 40 to 50% of the property. Putting that pipe in also included probably maybe it would go down to another.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I just think
it's
the opposite way of what
I
was thinking.
Yeah.
But you know, future stormwater would be making another pond or a bigger storage area.
And that one.
I mean, I can understand that for downstream. You know, we've got a piece of property we've been dealing with FEMA, and the people just got flooded out again after how many times?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's even happened. We've been working on it 6 years, so They were going to raise the house to stop it from flooding.
That's a picture of the house. It was taken in 2005. This is the basement. It's the flood damage. Pretty extensive.
Is that a full kitchen? And if so, is it a licensed accessory dwelling unit?
It wasn't then, but now it is.
Yeah. Just checking.
And the high water mark in the house in the basement was 74 inches. Most people's basements aren't 74 inches to begin with, but it's pretty close to the ceiling.
This is tall, isn't it?
We saw those pictures one other time. Mm-hmm.
You wish you were that tall.
Bad day for that.
That's pretty much it. I was going to show. That's a picture of damage to the foundation of the brick facade.
Can you go back to the map?
Which map?
You just passed it.
You just passed it. Yeah.
Yeah, that shows you. This is really an engineer drawing and shows to. This is that existing tributary that I was talking about there. This is what the proposed relief line was here. This is the dwelling right there. This line, this is where the pinch point is. You can't see the curvature in the stream, which is farther down. But this line here, this green line, is what I drew in. This is the limit of disturbance. You're going to have to disturb all this land and slope it down to accommodate that flow. So this is where you can see the property line. It's kind of in red, but it's a little faded on the screen that followed there. This whole area of the property is going to be consumed by it.
You drop about 12 feet.
That should do it. Now, the resolution for this, I'm not sure whether it's going to be December 13th or January 10th. But there'll be a resolution.
It's being introduced on December
13th. Yeah.
Well, it's being introduced?
13th.
13th, okay. Any questions?
Any questions? Any questions from the public?
Everybody.
I would just like to add that this house wasn't added. This house was one of the original ones from the $17 million ordinance, the pecking order. Once that was done, of course, we got extra money, which was good for FEMA, that put it back on the drawing board. So I just wanted to let everybody know that we just didn't pick this out. All of a sudden, it's been since...
It's on the original list.
Yes.
Just didn't work its way up.
Didn't make it down. Yeah.
And most on the original list weren't paid for 75% by FEMA.
Yeah, Penny.
Because we didn't want it.
Councilman Cartier.
Yeah, just at the indulgence of the members of council, I'd like to welcome State Senator Karen Peterson, who's here today with us. And she was once a county council president. And you're always welcome, and glad to see you. Just my question, the FEMA process that we are going through, is that a well-funded program, or is that for buyouts, or how is that faring as a continuing, you know, program with the federal government?
I'm not sure of the status of it. All I know is that there's a chance that federal funds across the board may be reduced 10%. In the next fiscal year, but I really don't know. Mike Powell from Denrep would probably be a good resource on that. We can follow up with him.
Okay, thank you. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
I just want to make one comment. In the years that I worked with the General Assembly, this house was a never-ending problem. We had meeting after meeting with not only the county, but with DelDOT regarding the pipe going under the road and trying to do something to help mitigate the issues here. So this is not surprising that this is before us today and probably very well deserved.
So you could have taken care of this.
Or if they started,
hey, I did. I got the conservation district involved. Look what you got out of them.
And you had to come here to steer them through, right?
They didn't put up any of their monies.
They don't have money.
Their money is our money.
That's exactly right.
I was going to say, that was federal money. It wasn't any state money. Anybody, any other councilmen? The public? Let's move on. What's that? Yeah, I know. It's got two things.
Jerry Clay.
Got three. These should be very important on the last one. These just happen to be all my district.
I was going to say that they're too far.
That's why I didn't want to run the meeting today.
Okay, and the second part of our presentation is to review the White Clay Creek flood studies. They too were authorized by the 17 million flood ordinance 04176. The two studies, the first one was a study in the Bread and Cheese Island area. It was completed in September 2005 at a cost of $85,100. And the second study, which was a larger study, studied the area from Kirkwood Highway to the Christina River, and it was completed in March 2006 at a cost of $426,900. That's basically a 10-mile stretch. And this right here is the White Clay Creek watershed. You can see the boundaries. It extends a lot of it into Pennsylvania.
It exploded.
And looks like a human brain. Right, but if you look at it, just to give you some perspective, if a drop of water falls in Pennsylvania here, it's going to go someplace else. If it hits there, it's going to go someplace else. But if a drop of water hits inside this boundary, it's going to end up right there. So everything that hits this area here ends up right there. Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
what are the rivers on the borders?
That's a good question.
Borders.
That's no, that's not the border.
But here, this
that's
border
what I think.
Is a ridge. Yeah, Red Clay is in there. This border is a ridge. You're not going to see a river at that border. That's a high spot.
Okay.
That's the top of a mountain.
So is that in between the Brandywine River and the Red Clay Creek?
No, Red Clay is in there.
Red Clay's part of it.
Red Clay's part
it's
of the
same
watershed.
Is this the high spot above the Red Clay Creek? The right edge?
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you. And on the left side? That's on the other side?
This side right here?
Yeah, is that a ridge above
that's the
White Clay Creek?
No, because
it's the Elk River. It's going
okay.
to the Elk. It's another watershed
okay.
in the Chesapeake. So you're seeing the division from the Chesapeake in the Delaware. I can't answer
that. Yeah, I know the Elk runs into the Chesapeake.
Right. The White Clay Creek
starts
is,
getting into mine.
Is right here.
Mm-hmm.
Is okay. right here. These are ridges that the water flows off of. I'm not exactly sure where they go on that southern border.
Okay.
There's one that comes out of Elk thing. Just a little bit in, and there's knowing from being on the public for the it's one of the, there's a creek that comes into Glasgow. Mm-hmm. I think it works this way, but there's a pump station or something. There's, just so everybody knows, 3/4 of your water for New Castle County are coming out of those three that watershed going with the Brandywine. So that's Lancaster County on the northern end. So whatever's up there affects us.
Okay, this slide is pretty nasty. I call it Flood Studies 101. It just kind of gives you a 30,000 foot perspective on what engineers do when they do a flood study for you. And the first thing they do is they perform a hydrologic analysis to estimate peak stormwater flow. You all remember when you're in the third grade and the teacher opened up that book and on page 57 and it was the water cycle. And it showed how water was, some of it gets intercepted. Well, we're interested in the part that lands on the surface of the ground and flows towards the stream. That's the part that we're interested in. Hydrologic analysis is another way of saying how much water is getting there. You take into account the contours of the land, the cover of the land, all those things, whether it's impervious or pervious. You can imagine how much water there would be if the entire White Clay Creek watershed was a paved parking lot versus a wooded area. So that's the first thing they did. And they use engineering principles and practices to do that. The second thing is they perform a hydraulic analysis to estimate stream, bridge, and culvert conveyance capability. All that, that's a fancy way of saying how good is the water being carried out of it. So if you're out on a job and you hear Larry Ireland and some engineer talking, saying, you know, we need an H&H study, this is what they're talking about, a hydrologic, hydraulic study. And those are the first two steps. Then they combine everything into a model. And the model's just a fancy way of, it's able to do a lot of calculations. It's able to combine the two analyses into one. And the resultant point is they can estimate through mathematical models and empirical data the depth of the stream for the desired storm that they're studying. In most cases, it's a 100-year storm. So they can tell what the depth is of that stream, which means they can tell what the elevation is. And they'll know that anything on each side of that stream that's below that elevation gets flooded in a 100-year event. And that's what that third step does for you. Now, you can do the first three steps, and you can do them as good as you could possibly do that. And a lot of young engineers make this mistake. But if you don't stand back and look at your results and make sure they make sense, you might as well not do it at all. And that's the fourth one, calibrate your model. It means you gotta go out in the field, look at high water marks, talk to people. You know, you might come to a business and say, look, we had a 100-year flood in July of 1989, and the water reached this point on the wall. I'll show you a high water mark. Well, your model should show an elevation that corresponds to that mark, or pretty close to it. If it doesn't, there could be something wrong with your model. So,
Mr. Chair.
Councilman Weiner.
Yes. Doesn't silting and sediment constantly move the accuracy of the model?
To a certain degree. To a certain degree.
Not significant?
Not significant enough to take into account. You're getting a little ahead of me, but...
Far be it from me.
But sediment will come into play here.
Okay.
But as far as the model goes, when they go out and they look at cross sections, they'll get field data to correspond how wide the cross section is as part of that second bullet, the hydraulic. If they see a lot of sedimentation in there, they'll note it. And it's something that could cause their model to be out of whack. They have to take account for it. That fourth step is where they sit back and they think of things like this. Well, you know, we're getting bad readings here, but there's a lot of sediment here. That comes into play. What you're going to see on some of these, both of these studies, is they're going to run the model for both the existing and proposed conditions and assess the impact on critical areas. So if they're talking about widening a bridge, they'll plug that into the model, and they can tell how that will impact flood mitigation. If there's a lot of sediment, they can remove that sediment in the model and determine how that sediment impacts. So that's basically flood studies 101. As you go out in the field on these drainage complaints, you're going to hear engineers talking, and at least this kind of gives you a little perspective on what they do.
Councilman Cartier.
So what is the definition of a 100-year storm?
A 100-year storm is a storm, and of course, the past events will make a fool out of me making a statement, but this is the definition. A 100-year storm is the storm that has a probability of one of occurring within a 100-year interval. In case you're counting, we probably had five or six since 1985. So
so we're good till the dinosaurs.
I can tell you the dates of all the ones in the 80s, because I managed the Wilmington sewer system. July 31st, 1985, July 5th, 1989, and July 17th, 1989. July 5th, 1989, storm came exactly 52 years after the previous 100-year storm, July 5th, 1937.
I make a motion, we do away with July.
So much for a storm. I mean, each one of these storms has a probability of one occurring within a 100-year interval. But you would think that a storm that has that won't come along every 100 years. And that's not the case.
So there really isn't a precipitation amount or rainfall amount associated with that. Just a severe event has a probability of occurring every 100 years.
Now there is. And I used to know this, but I'm shooting from the hip. But I think a storm with an intensity, I guess my definition is a storm with a hydrograph similar to a TR-55 type 2 with a rainfall intensity of 7.2 inches.
We understand.
Exactly what I would have said. Exactly what I would have said.
So really, it's a storm. There are, and Mike, you might want to help me out.
Let me put that up a little bit. A 100-year storm is a storm that has a probability.
I'm saying it, Mike. Say who you are.
My name is Mike Clark, Assistant County Engineer for the Department of Land Use. But a 100-year storm is a storm that has a 1% chance of occurring in any given year. There's nothing to stop them from occurring in back-to-back years. It would be an extreme situation. But it could happen. And of course, you have the 101-year storm, you know, which is right behind it. So it's basically, by definition, for convenience, we decided the floodplain would be associated with a 100-year storm. And the driving event for that would be a 100-year event precipitation, which would lead to the 100-year storm. But again, Our curves are changing, climate is changing, you're all aware of climate change that's going on. The discussion of who's causing it notwithstanding, we have recently revised the precipitation data for Newcastle County. It used to be 7.2 inches, but recent National Weather Service data shows us that it's now up to 8 inches of rainfall in a 100-year event. It is a changing parameter. And when we look at statistics, we look at our records. And our records, in some cases, are 60 years old, in some cases, 100 years old. So, you know, we're trying to predict a 100-year storm with about 100 years of data, and you would like to have 1,000 years of data to be more accurate. So, there's a considerable amount of uncertainty with all these flooding events. And the hydrologic models that we use have a level of accuracy of plus or minus 30%. That's the best that we can do right now. And the hydraulic aspect, which is a little bit more precise, measuring the depth of flow and flood levels, we have a level of accuracy in those models of plus or minus 1 to 2 feet.
I was just going to say, a lot of it's localized. If you were using 7 or 8 inches, that means a month this year I had 3 to 10-inch rains where not everyone around did, and we hit levels that, as you all know, I have ditches that are built on 100-year floods, and we were over top of them 3 times in 3 weeks. So.
And you can have localized thunderstorms, which are very large, but generally, when we look at storms that will drive a large watershed, in order to drive a watershed like the White Castle, you need to have a storm that's going to have pretty good coverage over that watershed. There may be, and that's where we get into a little confusion. So, there's always probably a 100-year storm happening in a 10-year period. It's some small subdivision because of thunderstorm activity. And it'll affect a small localized stream, but won't be a flooding to Christina or the Brandywine or the larger watersheds. And unfortunately, we don't have a real good handle on dealing with thunderstorms and localized effects in much of what we do. We look at bigger watersheds and bigger storms. we now have a procedure. We just went through some training recently with the Natural Resource Conservation Service of USDA, which puts out some of these models, and they have. We now have the ability, for example, to look at a gauge at Newark, at a rainfall gauge or a flow gauge, and develop our own distribution curve. So we're getting quickly. We're getting much more precise with what we can do, but there's it's still a mix between an art and a science.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, the first study is the Bread and Cheese Island study. It's one that didn't cost so much.
It was next to Panera Bread.
And it's, it was $85,000 opposed to the other one, serving $400,000. The purpose was to quantify expected flood levels, to evaluate the potential for mitigating flooding and chronically flooding properties in the area, specifically Stone Show Lumber and Metroform Medical Complex. The study proposed a flow bypass channel through Bread and Cheese Island, and it also proposed increased excavation for storage along the perimeter of the island. This map might help you see it a little bit better. Here's the properties, Shone Lumber and Metroform Medical, right in that area there. We looked at putting in a relief ditch here, and you can, in the back you might have a tough time seeing it, but you might see like a gray hatching. This area in here, they were looking at widening that a little bit. And if they could open up the flow a little bit there, that might reduce the flow elevations in here. So you got the Amtrak bridge right there. That's a picture shown. That's a picture taken at Shone Lumber looking across at the Metroform Center, February 2007, after a heavy rainfall. The results of the study, the bypass channel cutting through the island doesn't really help. It reduces the flood by flood elevations, the 100-year flood elevations by about 2 inches, I guess 0.15 feet, and it's not worth the 1 or 2 million dollars it would cost to do it. Of course, these figures here are 2005, 2006 figures. And the proposed floodplain excavation reduces the 100-year flood elevation by maybe 3 inches, 2 to 3 inches. And again, that's not worth the $1.4 million cost and the environmental impacts that you're going to create. Recommendations, obviously don't pursue these alternatives without other regional improvements. Consider floodproofing these properties, and since then, Shone Lumber was floodproofed with FEMA funds with the help of the district, conservation district. And it doesn't mean that these recommendations are bad. If, I'll go up to this other slide here. If you widen this Amtrak bridge here, it could change things in here to the point where you might want to remodel it, and these things may make a big difference. So it depends. But at this point, with no modifications there, it's not worth it. Okay, and this is the Kirkwood Highway to Christina River confluence study. Purpose developed concepts of reducing flood damage along an approximate 10-mile length of White Clay Creek between Kirkwood Highway and the confluence of White Clay and Christina River. This is kind of a map that just shows you the study area, Kirkwood Highway. I'm having trouble seeing this one right there. And Christina River confluence is right around here. This isn't the width. The blue areas are the 100-year and 500-year floodplain. It's not the stream.
Yeah.
Red Clay comes down here. Mill Creek comes here, and Pike Creek is right here. This is our latest water park.
We're going
to compete with Great Adventure. Now, actually, this is a picture of Brookhaven Park during the February 2007 flood.
Just got to pump the water up.
Kids love it.
That creek, yeah. Isn't that? Come right down the slide.
The findings of the study, the existing FEMA map, 100-year floodplain boundary is outdated, obviously. There's approximately 200 tax parcels located in the FEMA map 100-year floodplain. Approximately 80 more are likely to be in the actual 100-year floodplain.
Councilman Reda has a question.
Tony, go back to the other picture. Right there. Mm-hmm. Now, where is it in relation to that park? Where's the railroad track?
I couldn't tell you.
That's behind.
Oh, there it is.
Right behind them trees.
No. That's the white clay. It's on the other side.
On the other side?
Yeah. Towards Jim, where you were Jim's at.
Yes. Well, that's Brookhaven then.
Yes.
Right
there. Yeah, that's
where she's at.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that flooded in 1958. It hasn't changed yet.
No.
So what's the study about? We spending money for that?
No, we're spending money. I mean, this study was authorized by the flood ordinance.
Fishing.
And it was to remap, it was to look at concepts for improving the flow of white clay.
Yeah, I mean, right alongside that railroad tracks where they built them homes.
Right.
When they built them homes, it was mud. There was nothing but mud there.
That was Rutherford's right there.
I know, because I worked there. I co-op there.
Right.
And it was mud then, and rained, and it was nothing but flooded out then.
It's the same with the Stanton underpass.
Yeah,
I mean,
what do we study? We know there's water there. We're spending money for something like that. We ought to spend it on something to fix it.
We'd have to build a dike around
it. That sounds good.
Okay. And now for the findings. Again, there are 200 tax parcels in the regulated floodplain, the existing one, which is outdated. There's 80 more likely in what I call the actual floodplain. If they, you know, if this model was accepted by FEMA and the 100-year boundary was published, there would be more properties in it. Recent flood damage is primarily related to pre-regulation construction in the floodplain and an increased frequency of large storm events, like Mike was talking about, and building in the floodplain. FEMA is currently updating the 100-year floodplain mapping for the White Clay, Red Clay, and Mill Creek watersheds. So that's happening. The outdated floodplain maps are going to be updated. And this next bullet, the White Clay and Red Clay Creek mapping, using the hydrology and hydraulic analysis completed in connection with the studies commissioned by the ordinance that you passed in January 2005. So these studies here, these two studies are the basis for the remapping that's going on now. And that's partly made possible by an action that this council made 5 years ago. And when you update the floodplain, you prevent people from building in it. And when you build in the floodplain, it's kind of like if you have a puddle of water. If somebody takes a shovel of dirt and throws it in that puddle of water, what happens to the puddle of water? It expands into new areas. So your action in 2005 is helping people from preventing people from throwing that pile of dirt into the puddle and creating a bigger problem. So I think you deserve a pat on the back for that.
Councilman Smiley.
Well, don't pat yourself too hard yet.
I was patting you guys.
No, don't. I'm talking about us. Because one observation I want to make is about 2 years ago, and a few more, they either redid or someone started looking at the changes in the floodplain for the Ross Heights.
Right.
And their insurance tripled.
Yep.
So when you pat yourself on the back, you're going to be getting the calls when it's all done about that homeowner's insurance and the flood insurance tripling. You got people in there can't afford to pay the insurance now on the houses because they redid the plains, and they can't get refinanced or anything else on those homes. So I understand the good that it does.
It's terrible.
But and it needs to be done. Don't get me wrong. But there are adverse consequences to every single thing that you do. Just ask my wife.
But you have to remember that came from the federal government. That was a federal banking law that kicked that insurance into effect. Mm-hmm. Partially because not enough people were buying insurance and they needed jobs.
And some people out there if they're in the, if they're actually in the floodplain, they want to know it, and they want to be prepared for it with insurance.
Well, and...
Just let me jump in again. Believe me, there isn't anybody in Duras Heights that doesn't know, because that place flooded before I could even drive, and it, so I'm just saying, it wasn't something they weren't aware of, still...
But the penalty's on the bank, with the law that's there, it's not necessarily, yeah, I mean, if the banks, if you have a federally backed mortgage, you have to, and they say you need to have flood insurance, you have to have flood insurance, and it's, the rates, I certainly are questionable, I mean, I've seen rates where you have a townhouse, the one closest to the creek has a lesser premium than the one next to it, I don't think that their rates are well regulated, and, you know, it's written by local insurance companies who get paid something like 10% to do this, all the administration work on it, and they don't really want to do it, but that's the process at this point.
You know, a lot of these places you're talking about, I mean, when you take the Stanton Underpass, I mean, the one place my brother used to play at Crusaders football, across from where the old road is, it flooded all the time, and the only way we took care of that is the road's 20 foot higher. And I mean, to have a business building that you show flooded, I could have told you it was going to flood there.
Yeah, that picture was taken after the storm.
Why you got to bring up Lowe's?
Well, Lowe's, that's where it used to be. What helped you out of the state there?
Yeah. Everything that went in there flooded out.
Now it should have been, Sullivan Pools should have moved in.
But I just, I mean, that bus lot has been flooded so many times.
Yep.
I mean, every area you're not telling most of us that lived here most of our life anything new.
Right.
I mean, and we spent $500,000 to tell you something I could have told you.
The only constant is if it floods more, it will flood again.
Yep.
Well, we better buckle our chin straps and put our riot gear on, because the revised FEMA maps will be available 2012.
Well, there's also, and I was at a meeting, Mike Carr invited me, was with flood insurance, and it, with the rise of the ocean and bay or whatever, and what the difference will be there, and it'll affect some of your district, and affect mine and Councilman Bell's, is they're going to take in the wave heights. So what, it may only raise an inch or two, but when they take in a wave height, and this is all because of Katrina, all of a sudden they're going to have to be on stilts with breakaway walls, and that's how you build in a wet area where you're not flooding. You know, you'd have to raise it above.
Stilts, breakaway walls, and pontoons.
Yeah, yeah. So you can flood away.
Exactly.
But, I mean, it's the whole thing on floodplains are going to change. If you add another 2 foot of wave height, you're going to have a lot more floodplain than you ever had before.
Okay, and the recommendations that you're going to be getting from us, no one individual one is going to solve the problem. It's going to have to be a combination of each of the recommendations. And one of the things that are characteristics with the flood study, you'll see this common in just about every one, is that they'll recommend upstream storage. In the upland areas, you want to get storage capability to reduce the flows throughout the watershed. And we did that with Emily Bissell, and we did that with Del Castle in the Hyde Park area. We're not going to be able to do it here because there's no open area that's big enough for the storage volume that we would need to make an impact. There's just a scarcity of undeveloped land in this watershed, and there's also areas that, because it's designated as a wild and scenic river, you can't really disturb many of those areas. So you won't see upland storage as a recommendation in this study, but you'll see it. It'll be common, a common theme in a lot of the other flood studies that you'll be made privy to. Here's a few recommended projects to help the hydraulics in the area. Those of you in the back may have difficulty seeing it. We've listed these projects and we've got priorities attached to them. Red Mill Road Bridge, increased floodway flow area through sediment excavation, and that's a priority one. And when we talk about the floodway, in a stream. You have two areas in the stream, the floodplain and the floodway.
That's where the tree is.
The floodway is the block of area in the stream that actually carries the flood. The floodplain is the area that floods. If you're standing in the floodplain, it's probably the water's not high velocity. If you go in the floodway, you're not going to be there for long to be washed downstream. So, and we've asked, this was kind of an offshoot of the study. We've asked our consultant Duffield Associates to kind of prioritize them, list specific things that we could do and prioritize them. It's always important to prioritize stormwater projects, because if you do the wrong project first, you're going to cause a flooding problem somewhere else. So you can see priority 1, 2, 3, increase floodway through, floodway flow area through sediment excavation. You'll see some pictures where the sediment's building up. Red Mill Bridge, it's a Del Dot Bridge. Old Harmony Road Bridge, it's a Del Dot Bridge also. CSX Railroad, that's owned by the railroad, and...
Mr. Chair?
Councilman Weiner?
Yeah, could you identify where the CSX Railroad and Amtrak Railroad Bridge are?
Yeah, I would...
I can tell you right now, they're all on my district. Every single one of those. It's right behind Kirkwood High, the old Kirkwood Fitness, back in there. It's a railroad trestles. That's where that's at. And Harmony Bridge is going to go underneath of it.
Amtrak Bridge is right in here. They've got the bridges labeled here on this.
Yeah, wherever Harmony Road is, the bridge and the railroad trestle and everything's going to be there.
Harmony Road, they've got them labeled here, although it's difficult for you to see in the back.
Yeah.
And I got to apologize for this. It was an old study, and I took a picture of this with my iPhone, because it's a legal-sized document, and we converted it to a PDF file. We lost some clarity in doing that. So the first round was removing the sediment, and the second round is removing in-channel sediment deposits right near the bridges. And eventually, you get to the real high-ticket items, and that is putting flow relief lines in each one of the bridges there. And there, one's going to cost you $3 million, another one's going to cost you $10 million, another one's going to cost you $10 million. So if you add all this up, it's $23 million to $28
million.
But $23 million is the cost to put the flood relief lines into these bridges. Similar to what we talked about at the Hyde Run situation. Putting another culvert through, letting more water get through.
Tony,
two
questions. Number one, the settlement, the silt and everything in there. How realistic is that with, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers? Number one question. And number two, that can't be all of ours, because Del Dot has the bridges, right?
Del Dot has the bridges, and the railroads have their bridges. And neither one will let us come near their bridge.
And the Corps of Engineers?
And what?
What's likely for us to even...
Well, I think as far as the Corps of Engineers goes, they're their own entity, and I'm not sure what initiates the process there. They have their own planning sections and whatever.
Right
well,
now,
so
with some of the water,
depending
sheds,
on who you are,
what we found in Ag, and I don't know, Mike's kind of looking too, is the bigger the watershed, the harder it is to get a permit to do it. So if you're on the bottom end of the watershed, you're going to have a harder time getting a permit to dredge it out than you would on the upper end. And they're all sure. And I know this because we've had this on some farms, that part of the district said let it grow up as you're looking and don't maintain it. And the problem now is it's flooding the back end of the farm. So they've asked to go back. They took the cows out of the stream. They've asked to go clean it out. They can't get a permit to clean it out. So they've lost about 5 to 10 acres. So I don't know how. I know it's going to be hard to get a permit.
Well, because I was going to ask for a PDF on this, because let's face it, these are questions. Did everybody leave? Okay, it's just, State's not here no more, but I know, because half of this is ours. I mean, theirs, right?
Well, as a matter of fact, and the railroads, big part of it.
And the railroad.
I think everything is
No.
This is, then do it.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, sorry about that.
On the bridges that are DelDOTs, when we started with this study however many years ago, DelDOT asked that they be involved at least at the end when you got the study done, because they were willing to put some maintenance money into doing some of the things that they could do underneath their bridges. Now, has this ever been shared with them?
Yes.
And?
No response.
Who was it shared with? Mark Alexander was the person that was in these discussions to begin with, and the one that said that they would be willing to work in, you know, through maintenance, some of the things that they could do without getting core permits, or even be willing to look into doing that if there was some long-term.
Let me look up who specifically we contacted.
Take it to Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
We did contact an individual, and we explained to them what the responsibilities were.
Okay, and I mean, truly, Mark should probably be brought into this if he wasn't the person, because he...
we know who it...
He'll give
at least you didn't hit me there.
He was close. I'm getting there. Because he, you know, I mean, he asked for this, he talked about it, he knows the bridges, and he said that they were willing to do something, and I see no reason that if it didn't go to him, you know, it might be in a black hole someplace, but he would be the local person that would be... have the responsibility for the maintenance of this area.
So back when they thought they had,
I would, as she said, just knowing the railroad crossings that are in my district, there has to, you got to keep putting pressure on them to get those things.
Yeah, and it's certainly not too late to get Mark involved. We can send him this stuff tomorrow.
Councilwoman.
Yeah. We'll be occupied.
Can I just ask a question? We're having sewer overflow in the Brookside area that I think is related to this. Will these fixes help that, because it will, you know, these areas will be able to handle more water?
I can't really comment on that.
Part of it's the river.
Tracy Thurl, I don't believe this is connected to the sewer issue.
Okay.
Our sewer system is a confined, closed system.
I just wasn't sure, I mean, whether... whether there was any connection here. Okay.
Just one follow-up.
Stormwater.
Just one follow-up comment to Councilman Sheldon's question about the Corps of Engineers. My impression, my unofficial impression, is money is very tight right now in the Corps of Engineers. So they're figuring on 10% cutbacks in the next fiscal year.
Well, I know the reason why I brought that up, I know Council's flooded 20 years ago, flooded 50 years ago. This is the slide. This is the slide that goes there. I mean, I know all the other work. This is what fixes it. So now we know.
Yeah, this slide reminds me of the movie Casablanca. Claude Rains goes round up the usual suspects. When you study a watershed, you round up the usual suspects, and it's the bridges and culverts.
Councilman Carrion.
Just going back to the stream maintenance issue, okay? So from what I'm gathering in the conversation, it's extremely unlikely that the county government will be going in actually removing sediments and changing the floodway in a stream, right? From what I'm hearing, right? Because the Army Corps is going to really allow us to do that, correct?
We don't have the resources.
Well, just apart from that.
Right.
Years ago, because I got an area in my district where people, you were up there visiting up there in the, you know, the the watershed up in Lancashire, up in there, it's Maidens Creek. But people in that development claim, well, years ago, the county used to come in here and pull all the sediment out of the stream. You know, I know what to make of that. Perhaps years ago we did that. There wasn't a permitting process, correct?
That's absolutely correct.
All right, now it's extremely regulated.
That's correct.
Okay, so if we're not really going to change the floodway and getting a permit with Corps, it's an unlikely thing, apart from the resource issue, then our real, the only real thing we could do is going to the, to the, to the idea that we keep debris and fallen trees out of streams that are non-tidal. That's really pretty much the maintenance activity we do, correct?
That's correct.
Beyond that, that's it, right?
Any other debris?
It's not just debris. Any growth.
Sedimentation is really tied into the geomorphology of the stream.
Right.
And that's why regulators don't like you there.
Right.
Because that same sediment, the next storm replenishes an eroded area.
I got it, for whatever reason. So I'm just trying to relate this to what my constituents are, you know, hitting me with. But really, we go and clean out fallen trees, other types of debris, you know, trash that's impeding flow. I remember when I first got elected, we're looking at all the streams we found. You know, a lot of them were jammed up with debris, right? So we clear that out. And beyond that, that's really about all we're going to do with streams, right? That's pretty much what I'm hearing.
What, I just got a question. What year were they, when they were saying they were dipping that mess?
They have these stories when Dick Cecil was the councilman in the area, which is going back to the 80s, 70s, and 80s.
Talking about the Clean Water Act was really when everything changed, and that was in the early, you know, early 70s.
Oh, yeah. People have different kinds of memories.
By the time they implemented it, it could have been.
But sediment removal was an active practice 10, 20 years ago.
Okay.
It's not... This just gives you an idea. Again, I apologize about the picture quality. This is the Amtrak Railroad Bridge. You have a couple big sediment piles there. That was one of the recommendations, clean them out underneath the bridge. Of course, Amtrak will not let us go near that bridge. They don't want us with an excavator near their supports because it could undermine the bridge. This is a picture taken right out of the report. This is bad because it's got a lot of sun glare in it, but this is the CSX Railroad Bridge. This is kind of interesting here. It's kind of an opening off to the side of the bridge. Gives you an opportunity to put flow relief there. Might be a little bit easier. But again, they don't like to dig around their supports either because of the, you'll disrupt the foundation. You have to underpin it.
Is that them to understand?
Yes.
What were the, did they have any records of what the elevations were? Like, is this all filled in?
That right there?
Yeah.
That's off to the side.
I understand that, but I mean,
was it over before?
You know, was it, if you were 2 foot lower, anywhere, it's a heck of a lot more.
Your lowest way.
Same.
If it filled up then.
That's pretty high there.
Yeah, this is pretty high there. You have an embankment going down.
That's about 10, 12 feet.
That was just really.
This just gives you an opportunity to put a pipe into that demo of the tracks. If you underpin it.
So the train doesn't come down.
And good luck getting that approval, too. That's tough to do.
You got
to
do it when the train's not going over.
It's about 10, 12 feet.
And just some other recommendations going forward. Geomorphic modification to the creek channel and floodplains to improve flood conveyance, including removal of existing weirs. That would cost in $2,005, $400 to $1,000 per foot of stream length.
Yeah, we're choking on it too.
Geomorphic, everybody knows what that means, right? That has to do with the natural state of the stream, its ability, its formation, and its ability to reform through the sedimentation process. It's become a buzzword to include biohabitat formation and all that, but you'll see that word pop up as you go through these studies. Continued public purchase of select flood-prone properties, approximately $10 million for flood-prone residential properties listed in Table 4 of the study, and we can provide that information to you. There's several properties that they recommend buying out, but obviously that's a pretty good thing. Public grants and loans for owner-directed flood-proofing of existing floodplain structures. Well, Shone Lumber did that. They did some flood-proofing there, and they got FEMA assistance. Installation of flood protection systems, such as levees and flood walls, they'll cost you approximately $800 to $2,500 for length of levee or wall. Again, you've got to be very careful. You're not allowed to build in the floodplain because of UDC. And you can't build probably within 50 to 100 feet because of the UDC. It's a protected resource.
It's 100 feet now.
So whatever you do, you're going to have to do that outside of that area. Changes to land use and stormwater management within the watershed. Through the Department of Land Uses and FEMA's initiative to update floodplain maps. This is the biggest thing we can do, and this is what we are putting in motion in 2012, even though people will be upset that they got to get flood insurance. At least we'll know where the actual floodplain is. It will line up much better with the regulatory floodplain, and we can stop people building in the floodplain. So, and this study that you commissioned 6 years ago laid the foundation for this to happen. I think that's the last slide.
Can we get a PDF on this?
Yes.
So I just want one page, really.
we can
enough
get you
for me to handle.
You want the page that says it's not us.
Do you want one or both? Both presentations or just one?
Both, yeah.
They're all his district.
Both.
Yeah, right.
Give them both.
You should give them everything.
Thank you.
Is there any more questions on this? Any from the public? No? Let's move on to the next thing. What do we do? I know, she's pointing to something else.
The deer.
The master hunters. This is in your district, too?
That's why I let you run the meeting. It was all, you know, that way I could ask you questions about Bambi and everything else. So.
Quiet now. No more.
Okay, no more. I'm done.
Sorry.
It's in two districts.
Is it?
Me.
In here, too?
A little.
John Husband, Special Services. We're here to give you a quick update on the Middle Run managed deer hunt that we are proposing to do this year. For those who don't know, for two decades now, we've been trying to do managed deer hunts in Middle Run Valley. There's a big problem with deer, especially in northern Newcastle County. We're about 145 deer per square mile. Division of Fish and Wildlife would have like to have us down to 40. So we've got 100 deer per square mile more than we should have. We didn't get any traction with doing a managed deer hunt in Middle Run Valley Natural Area for quite a while. Richard DuPont's estate used to have a managed hunt along with White Clay Creek State Park, and every time they would coordinate their hunt, the deer would run across Paper Mill Road and stand in Middle Run Valley. Then they'd go back. You can see the highway that they would make themselves across. We received an email from Councilman Sheldon back in 05. A deer was found in one of his constituents' pools, drowned to death. I guess drowned to death is
kind of redundant.
But drowned. And there was a lot of problems. They've actually associated a lot of single car accidents where there's deaths,
in the water,
thinking now that a lot of it is to avoid avoidance of deer that are jumping out. At any rate, this council approved a deer hunt working with Division of Fish and Wildlife back in 2006. And 2006, 7, and 8, we had managed hunts where we were able to do some great work. They used, as well as the Fish and Wildlife personnel, we only allowed master hunters to join in the hunt. Fish and Wildlife ran out of money for 9 and 10, and even 11. So the hunt kind of stopped. Chris McKinley, who is a registered master hunter with the state, contacted Councilman Powers. He had a meeting with us, and the master hunters said they would like to partner with Newcastle County and do another managed hunt. It seemed like a great idea. We met several times and worked with Joe Rogerson, Fish and Wildlife, who, if you remember, was here before this council, and I believe in the spring, about reducing some of the zones that they were looking for statewide. He's going Fish and Wildlife will work with us. We have a deer hunt scheduled for December 14th and 15th. We've got the master hunters all signed up. We work closely with Chris to identify all the sites. And what we're hoping for is to be able to continue this practice where Newcastle County can actually, in partnership with the master hunters, have the deer hunt regularly. It'll go a long way to controlling the deer population in northern Newcastle County. I just wanted to let you know that's coming. We're going to be sending out official notices to the adjacent landowners. They'll actually receive a letter. You'll get a similar letter that we'll send to you to kind of remind you that it's upcoming, because that's next Wednesday and Thursday. Fish and Wildlife officers are on notice. They'll be around. We'll also have our county police on notice. We're going to have 40 master hunters. We're only going to hunt 20 each day, so we're going to have 20 assisting in case somebody tries to wander into the park and to actually bring deer out and keep everything, keep the public perception down as much as we can. The last three hunts we had no problems whatsoever. I don't believe anybody had gotten a call. So that's what we plan on doing. If you have any questions.
Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't remember. Does the venison go to shelters? Or
yes,
what are we doing?
Actually, it does. It goes to Hunters for Hunger. There's a butcher, I believe he's in Newcastle, who is offered to do all of the butchering for free that gets donated. In my records, I've got how many pounds of meat was actually donated to the Hunters for Hunger program. So it's actually a great thing that the Fish and Wildlife has set up.
Slim Jims for everybody.
We tried to do it last year, just didn't have enough time. Chris lives in Farmington, so it's going to be your person.
Yeah. I've been chatting with him on email.
But we only allow master hunters in. It's mm-hmm. not. This is not open to anybody. It's invitation only.
Just one question. And what happens? Could the opposite happen, that they run into the White Clay State Park or something like that?
It could. They just finished their managed hunt two weeks ago.
Okay.
But we're going to have enough people where we're going to try to put on drives to keep them moving.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of them can bed down right in there and not even never leave. Councilman Cartier.
Is this a bow or a gun hunt?
This is shotgun. Mostly concentrated on doe. There are some antler deer that will allow to be taken, but you have to have a special tag for that.
Councilman Tack.
Thank you, Mr. John, what did you say? They're going to be driving around, what, trying to keep the deer in the area or trying to hit them?
Well, when I'm driving, it's not vehicular driving.
They walk through the woods, pushing them one way.
Spaced out. And it just keeps them moving.
Chasing them towards the hunter?
I wish it could be so accurate. It's like herding cats. They move wherever they want.
Or council.
No comment.
No Adam here today. Right?
That's why we need the licensed cats.
And John, is this the only area in the county that you're going to look at having one of these hunts, or have you identified any others?
Middle Run Valley is the only place where it's logical for Newcastle County to get involved. We have 850 acres, but believe it or not, with the safety zones, it only puts us down to 400 acres. Mm-hmm. But that's still quite a bit of land.
And why is that? Just because of this? I mean, people hunt every day all over the county. It's just because of us, the government, and the safety zone? Or?
Well, it's all of the smaller areas that are north of the canal, our population. It's great habitat for the deer. They proliferate. Some of them are actually starving themselves because there's not enough food out there for them. There's not enough hunters.
142 on 648 is what, a square mile?
The other hunts that we did, we averaged 139 to 152 deer in a two-day hunt.
Damn. Somebody had their Councilman Cartier.
If the safety buffer for a gun is probably pretty significant, what about for a bow and arrow type
Whatever Fish and Wildlife came and asked this council about with the safety zones, if you all remember that with the bow, I think it took care of itself with something that the state did. That's why they've not pursued.
I was just going to, I mean, part of it is it's probably for the short amount of time you're hunting.
Right.
It's more efficient.
Yeah.
Because your range with a bow is not very far.
Right.
And all the stands are strategically placed. We put them all where we thought were the best, and we've GPSed them. Or we'll be escorting the hunters in.
Right now, we all
hear.
Any other?
Heard the deer tour?
Is there any other questions? Any questions from the public? Anything under other? Any public comment on anything?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Then move and say all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
You too, Dad.
No, I don't have to. I just put you out of the main job. I use a high power rifle.
I just don't want anybody to
get here. Yes, yeah, he's going to come in.
Thank you. 1,500 pounds. What, you and I are going to lift it up?